You're listening to Sandy Adams Radio. Pastor Sandy is the senior pastor of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. He's currently teaching through the book of Psalms. Now, here's Pastor Sandy in the book of Psalms as he teaches through chapters 58 through 67.
Scriptural authority comes from the Bible. Spiritual authority comes from the Bible, not the traditions and the councils and the pronouncements of the church. This book is our authority. Sola Scriptura. Christ alone. He is our mediator, not the Pope, not Mary, not the saints. We go to Jesus and Jesus alone. Faith alone. Sola Fide. Jesus' death on the cross earned a complete pardon for sin. Saying the rosary, saying 1,000 Hail Marys don't add to his finished work. And grace alone. God's favor is a free gift. It can't be gained by our good works or our charitable deeds or our religious rituals. Sola Scriptura, Sola Christus, Sola Fide, Sola Gratia. Scripture alone, Christ alone, faith alone, grace alone, alone. Trust in him and him alone. Verse 6, he only is my rock and my salvation. He is my defense. I shall not be moved. And God is my salvation and my glory. The rock of my strength and my refuge is in God. Trust in him at all times, you people. Pour out your heart before him. God is a refuge for us. Surely men of low degree are a vapor. Men of high degree are a lie. If they are weighed on the scales, they are altogether lighter than vapor. All humans are lightweights compared to God. Do not trust in oppression, nor vainly hope in robbery. If riches increase, do not set your heart on them. He's saying mortal men and material wealth will ultimately let you down. Now, I hope that God blesses many of you with increased riches. I pray for that. For he uses servants with material means and with the gift of giving to advance his kingdom. But there is a pitfall. If riches increase, do not set your heart on them. Possessions are not evil as long as your possessions don't possess you. As Paul said, for the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. Verse 11, God has spoken once, twice I have heard this, that power belongs to God. I hope all those that have been elected to office remember that, that power belongs to God. Author Lloyd Ogilvie, he puts it this way, those who trust in God alone have him and everything else. Those who trust in him and anything else end up without him and nothing else. Ultimately, all power is derived from God. Psalm 62 closes, also to you, O Lord, belongs mercy, for you render to each one according to his work. Power and mercy belong to God. Psalm 63 is titled, A Psalm of David When He Was in the Wilderness of Judah. Now, Psalm 63 was probably written by David after he had been driven from Jerusalem by his rebellious son Absalom. He begins, O God, you are my God. Early will I seek you. My soul thirsts for you. My flesh longs for you in a dry and thirsty land where there is no water. I've been in the Judean wilderness, and it's one of the driest and most barren places on the planet. Temperatures in the summertime reach 120, 125 degrees. There's no shade. The only relief from the hot desert sands is early in the morning. And that's when David seeks God. He says, early will I seek you. My soul thirsts for you. It's been said man can live 40 days without food. He can live 3 days without water. He can live about 8 minutes without air. But he can't live a single second without God. As David describes the barren desert, he could just as easily be talking about our world today. Today we live in a materialistic wasteland. A dried up spiritual climate. And what does it do? It leaves people hungry and thirsty. for spiritual truth, for true relationship with God. Only God Himself can satisfy us. He says, so I have looked for you in the sanctuary to see your power and your glory. David has left the palace, and he'd left his harem, he'd left his throne, he'd left his city, but the only thing he longs for to return to is the sanctuary, for there he'll find the presence of God. He says, because your loving kindness is better than life, my lips shall praise you. Thus I will bless you while I live. I will lift up my hands in your name. Remember, David was king. He had experienced a lot of life, extravagance, and pleasure, and excitement, and adventure, and fame. And yet none of it held a candle to one drink of God's goodness. He says, your loving kindness, O God, it's better than life itself. Verse 5, my soul shall be satisfied as with marrow and fatness, and my mouth shall praise you with joyful lips. When I remember you on my bed, I meditate on you in the night watches, because you have been my help. Therefore, in the shadow of your wings, I will rejoice. My soul follows close behind you. Your right hand upholds me. I want you to notice, David gives God both ends of his day. Did you notice this? Verse 1, early will I seek you. Verse 6, I will meditate on you in the night watches. He gives God both ends of his day. When he wakes up, first person he talks to is God. Before he goes to bed, the last person he speaks to is God. In verse 8, he says, my soul follows close. I like how the old King James renders verse 8. It says, my soul follows hard after you, God. Do you follow God aggressively? Do you follow hard after God? Or do you just kind of toy with God? Do you just kind of play with the things of God? When it's convenient, when it's kind of there in front of you, that's when you'll kind of delve in. You know, when you've got nothing else to do and you happen to see your Bible sitting over in the corner, you'll walk over, you'll pick it up, maybe you'll read it then. Is that how you treat God? Or do you follow hard after God? In the morning when I wake up, you're my first thought. At night before I go to bed, you're the one I want to end my day with. He says, but those who seek my life to destroy it shall go into the lower parts of the earth. They shall fall by the sword. They shall be a portion for jackals. But the king shall rejoice in God. Everyone who swears by him shall glory. But the mouth of those who speak lies shall be stopped. Voltaire, the French infidel, liked to mock God. He thought that wars were won by force, not faith. And he would often scoff, God is on the side of the big battalions. That's what Voltaire would say. David, though, would disagree. Without God's intervention, he knew that he stood little chance of regaining his kingdom. But David trusted in God. And David knows the only way Absalom can steal David's throne is for Absalom to knock God off his throne. And that ain't going to happen. So David is brimming with confidence as Psalm 63 closes. Psalm 64 could be entitled, A Sharp Tongue Gets a Split Lip. Like that? A sharp tongue gets a split lip. In the psalm, God judges those who have slandered David. He says, hear my voice, O God, in my meditation. Preserve my life from fear of the enemy. Now notice David doesn't ask God or doesn't ask to be delivered from the enemy. He asks to be delivered from the fear of the enemy. Most of my greatest troubles are those that never happened. You know? So often it's not... Our worst enemy becomes the fear of the trouble. Fear of man paralyzes faith in God. In the words of FDR, all we have to fear is fear itself. He prays that God will deliver him from the fear of the enemy. He says, hide me from the secret plots of the wicked, from the rebellion of the workers of iniquity who sharpen their tongue like a sword. Oh my. That's a gossip for you. Sits around his kind. Sharpening their tongue like it was a sword. As I mentioned, a sharp tongue gets a split lip. And bend their bows to shoot their arrows. Bitter words. Man, they're like poison darts. That's the imagery. That they may shoot in secret at the blameless. Suddenly they shoot at him and do not fear. Ever been hit with one of these poison darts? Word of gossip? A lie told about you? Slander? Hurts, doesn't it? Stings. And a juicy lie, it emboldens the liar. That's what he says. Suddenly they shoot at him and do not fear. You know, once they start down this path, you know, they get emboldened. You know, a gossip gets reckless with his words and gets more and more reckless. The more they get away with, the more they tend to spout. It's been said the gossip is the devil's postman. They encourage themselves in an evil matter. They talk of laying snares secretly. They say, who will see them? They devise iniquities. We have perfected a shrewd scheme. They think they're going to get away with their deceit. He says, both the inward thought and the heart of man are deep. I'll never forget my granddaddy's pocket knife. He had a pocket knife he carried with him all the time. He must have sharpened it every day. It was so sharp that he'd just sort of slide it down his arm and he'd just sort of peel the hair right off his arm. You know, we'd all, wow, that's sharp. It was really sharp. His knife would sort of slide through a piece of leather just like it was butter. He honed that knife on a whetstone. He took me down to see it one time. And he just honed it on that whetstone until it got razor sharp. Here we're told that men sharpen their tongues on the whetstone of envy, on the whetstone of pride. That's where gossip is born. That's where gossip gets sharp. He says, but God shall shoot at them with an arrow. Suddenly they shall be wounded. So he will make them stumble over their own tongue. All who see them shall flee away. All men shall fear and shall declare the work of God, for they shall wisely consider his doing. The righteous shall be glad in the Lord and trust in him, and all the upright in heart shall glory. God has arrows of his own. The truth is also a pointed reality. And God will eventually defend the righteous from lying lips and from the slandering tongue. You know, A.B. Simpson, he once wrote this. I would rather play with forked lightning or take in my hands hot wires with their fiery current than to speak a reckless word against any servant of Christ. Wow. When someone tells lies about us, we don't have to defend ourselves. God has arrows of his own, and God will shoot back. Now, Psalm 65 through 68 are prophetic of a time yet future. Let me give you just sort of a thumbnail sketch of end time prophecy. The rapture of the church is going to occur, and then 7 years of great tribulation, God's judgment, are going to come upon this earth. It occurs right before the second coming of Jesus, and three things are going to happen during the great tribulation. Three P's, you can remember them. God is going to punish the wicked world in which we live. That's what the great tribulation is all about, God's punishment. At the same time, too, God is going to purify Israel, his people. They're going to come through it, through the difficulties, with a refined faith. And then the third thing that's going to happen during that time, it involves you and me, we're going to party down in heaven with Jesus Christ. Okay? So the great tribulation, God is going to punish the wicked. He's going to purify Israel, and he's going to party with the church. After the great tribulation, Jesus returns to earth, and he establishes his kingdom. He ends man's dominion, and he restores the earth to its original beauty. The desert flowers like a rose. The lamb lies down with the lion. The curse of Genesis 3 is lifted. Jesus rules the nations, and he ushers in an age of peace. This kingdom lasts for 1,000 years, and it is the subject of Psalm 65. Praise is awaiting you, O God, in Zion, and to you the vow shall be performed. O you who hear prayer, to you all flesh will come. Now notice Jesus is called the God who hears prayer. Today we come to Jesus spiritually on our knees in prayer, but the day will come when we'll rise to our feet and we'll walk up to Jerusalem and we'll speak to him personally, physically. Iniquities prevail against me. As for our transgressions, you will provide atonement for them. This is what Jesus has already done for us on Calvary's cross. He says, blessed is the man you choose and cause to approach you, that he may dwell in your courts. He shall be satisfied with the goodness of your house, of your holy temple. By awesome deeds in righteousness, you will answer us, O God of our salvation, you who are the confidence of all the ends of the earth and of the far off seas. All the earth is going to trust in Jesus during this time. You know, Zechariah chapter 14, verse 16 tells us that in this day, the whole earth is going to come up to Jerusalem once every year to worship Messiah from his throne there, who reigns on his throne there in Jerusalem. We're told they worship the God who established the mountains by his strength, being clothed with power. You who still the noise of the seas, the noise of their waves, and the tumult of the peoples. You remember back in Genesis, we discussed how that the earth's ecosystem was far different before the flood of Noah than afterwards. That before the deluge, a canopy, a water vapor canopy, sort of shrouded the earth and created a greenhouse effect on the planet. That's why there were no large-scale air movements or storms before the flood. In fact, there wasn't even any rain before the flood. According to verse 7, in the kingdom age, Jesus will once again still the storms. He'll silence the tumult of the people. He'll end the noise of the seas, the noise of the waves. He'll still the storms. From that, we might assume that God will restore this canopy environment. And once again, the earth will be shielded from the sun's harmful radiation. As a result, the earth will become a tropical paradise. People will live to extremely old ages, just as they did before the flood. This is all going to happen again. And by the way, it's all predicted for us in the latter chapters of Isaiah. Verse 8, they also who dwell in the farthest parts are afraid of your signs. You make the outgoings of the morning and evening rejoice. And of course, after the great tribulation, the folks who are left are going to tremble at God's signs, for they will have seen plenty. Terrible signs and terrible wonders will rock this planet off its axis. In that day, God won't have much trouble getting people's attention. He says, you visit the earth and water it. You greatly enrich it. The river of God is full of water. You provide their grain, for so you have prepared it. You water its ridges abundantly. You settle its furrows. You make it soft with showers. You bless its growth. You crown the year with your goodness and your paths drip with abundance. They drop on the pastures of the wilderness, and the little hills rejoice on every side. The pastures are clothed with flocks. The valleys also are covered with grain. They shout for joy. They also sing. Man, when Jesus reigns on this earth, this planet will enjoy unprecedented peace and prosperity. In the meantime, all creation groans, Paul tells us in Romans. All creation groans and longs for the redemption of this planet. Matter of fact, Romans chapter 8 sums up this longing, and I love the Phillips translation. Let me read it to you. Romans 8, the whole creation is on tiptoe to see the wonderful sight of the sons of God coming into their own. In the end, the whole of created life will be rescued from the tyranny of change and decay and have its share in the magnificent liberty which can only belong to the children of God. What a day. May that day come quickly. Psalm 66 begins, make a joyful shout to God, all the earth. Remember, Psalm 61 began with a cry. Psalm 62 began with silence. Now Psalm 66 begins with a shout. And in verse 2, it follows up with singing. So, how do we approach God? Well, how do you feel? Feel like crying? Go ahead and cry. Feel like being silent? By all means, be silent. Feel like shouting? Go ahead and shout. Feel like singing? Sing a good song. What you don't do when you come to God is mask over your feelings. Cover them up. Put up a wall or facade. Whenever you go to God, you always start where you're at. He knows where you're at anyway, doesn't he? You always start where you're at. I love that song. Come just as you are. That's how God always wants us to come. He says, sing out the honor of his name. I love this. Make his praise glorious. In other words, crank it up, man. Jazz it up. Juice it up. Put in them licks and them kicks. How about a little harmony? Let's build it to a crescendo. Let's make God's praise glorious. Always remember, worship is the combination of both heart and art. Say to God, how awesome are your works. Through the greatness of your power, your enemies shall submit themselves. All the earth shall worship you and sing praises to you. They shall sing praises to your name. Come and see the works of God. He is awesome in his doing toward the sons of men. He turned the sea into dry land. They went through the river on foot. He refers to the crossing of the Red Sea. He says, there we will rejoice in him. He rules by his power forever. His eyes observe the nations. Do not let the rebellious exalt themselves. Oh, bless our God, you peoples, and make the voice of his praise be heard, who keeps our soul among the living and does not allow our feet to be moved. For you, O God, have tested us. You have refined us as silver is refined. You brought us into the net. You laid affliction on our backs. You have caused men to ride over our heads. We went through fire and through water, but you have brought us out to rich fulfillment. And this is the song that the Jews will sing during the Great Tribulation. For fierce persecution will purify them and refine them. Verse 13, I will go into your house with burnt offerings. I will pay you my vows, which my lips have uttered and my mouth has spoken when I was in trouble. I will offer you burnt offerings of fat animals with the sweet aroma of rams. I will offer bulls with goats. Come in here, all you who fear God, and I will declare what he has done for my soul. I cried to him with my mouth, and he has extolled with my tongue. And then verse 18, if I regard iniquity in my heart, the Lord will not hear. Now, it's not that God refuses to hear our prayers if there's sin in our lives. If that were the case, then we could just forget about prayer altogether. No, the psalmist is talking here about deliberate rebellion. If there's a lack of honesty, if we're trying to cover things up, if we're not being open and upfront with God, if that's the case, then it's going to cause static on the line between us and God. God only listens to a repentant heart, a humble heart, and an honest heart. 1 Peter chapter 3 tells husbands to love their wives so that their prayers will not be hindered. Apparently, stubbornness and pride interfere with all our relationships. Between our wives, between our God. Verse 19, but certainly God has heard me. And the psalmist has humbled his heart. And God has attended to the voice of my prayer. Blessed be God who has not turned away my prayer nor his mercy from me. Psalm 67 is where we'll end tonight. God be merciful to us and bless us and cause his face to shine upon us, that your way may be known on earth, your salvation among all nations. Let the peoples praise you, O God. Let all the peoples praise you. O, let the nations be glad and sing for joy, for you shall judge the people righteously and govern the nations on earth. Let the peoples praise you, O God. Let all the peoples praise you. Today, the earth abounds with mockers and scoffers, but not in the end. When the earth is judged, and when God fills hell with unrepentant sinners, all who are left on earth will believe. And in that day, all the peoples will praise King Jesus. Verse 7, then the earth shall yield her increase. God, our own God, shall bless us. God shall bless us in all the ends of the earth. From March the 10th to the 23rd, I'll be leading a tour to Israel, and we would love for any of our listeners to join us. We'll start at the magnificent theater on the Mediterranean, where Paul preached to King Agrippa, and we'll end with worship and communion at the Garden Tomb. In between, it's one exciting adventure after another. Imagine relaxing by the Sea of Galilee one day and floating on the Dead Sea the next, exploring waterfalls in the Golan Heights, and admiring the desert from the top of Masada. We'll spend time in the rock city of Petra and in the holy city of Jerusalem. We'll ride camels, wade through Hezekiah's tunnel, boat across the Sea of Galilee, and study God's word at every turn. Hey, a trip to Israel is like a Bible study on steroids. If you've never been, I encourage you to go. And if you like, you can go with us. Our trip is affordably priced. If you'd like more details, please contact us. Here's Josh to give you that information.
Thanks, Pastor Sandy. Yes, to learn more about this exciting trip, visit sandyadams.org. Again, this amazing trip is taking place March 10th through the 23rd, 2019. We encourage you to contact the church office at Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain. You can call us at 770-736-2828 or log on to sandyadams.org. On behalf of Pastor Sandy and the entire production team, it's our prayer that you would seek the Lord about joining Pastor Sandy in Israel in March of 2019.